I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Section Chief Herb Stapleton of the FBI's Cyber Division. The FBI's goal with cyber threats and cybercrime is to change the behavior of criminals and nation states who believe they can compromise U.S. networks, steal financial and intellectual property, and put critical infrastructure at risk without facing risk themselves. To learn more about the FBI's Cyber Division, visit fbi.gov/investigate/cyber. Welcome, Section Chief Stapleton. It's so great to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So, Section Chief Stapleton, you've been with the Bureau for almost 17 years now. Can you, to start off, give us a little background on your career and what led you to the FBI and then, of course, ultimately to the Cyber Division?
Absolutely. So before I came to the FBI, I was an attorney in private practice. I did that for about 4 years, and it gave me a great background in the law and in kind of understanding, how to work with big businesses. I represented banks and some other corporations. But after 9/11, like a lot of my colleagues who came in the sort of early 2000s, like I did, I sort of felt this calling to do something where I felt like I could make a real positive impact in a certain way. And so that's really what kind of drew me to the FBI. I'd always kind of had some interest in being an FBI agent, but I think that was really kind of a catalyst for me that moved me a little closer toward achieving that goal. So I came into the FBI in 2004, as you alluded to, and I started out working in a really small resident agency in Southeast Missouri. And that was just, that was the best really introduction to the FBI I could have hoped for, because a lot of responsibility, particularly for a new agent, and a lot of exposure to a broad range of the FBI's work, particularly in the criminal space or criminal investigations. So I worked white collar cases, I worked drug and gang cases, I worked bank robbery cases, just really a lot of different opportunities across the board. And I would say that my first exposure to cyber work, really came there in the Cape Girardeau, Missouri resident agency, when I started working cases on the sexual exploitation of children on the internet. So, and of course, those are very challenging cases in a lot of regards, as you can imagine, but they are also very, very rewarding cases, when you're able to find justice for those particular victims. And so that was really kind of my first introduction to internet investigations. And as I moved through my other assignments, I worked sort of on and off in the cyber world. I was a supervisory special agent at the Internet Crime Complaint Center for a while, and later had the opportunity to head up the cyber investigative program in the Cincinnati field office as the special agent, assistant special agent in charge there. And that was my last job before I came here to Cyber Division to work on this, the really important cyber criminal mission that I'm fortunate enough to be a part of now.
Great. Really interesting career and really admirable path. So excited to have you on the show. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we're all talking about this, but of course, so many industries have been working from home since March and will continue to do so into 2021. In general, how has COVID-19 impacted cyber threats, and what are the trends that you're seeing in the cyber division?
Prior to COVID-19, we were already really experiencing a steady rise in cyber criminal activity. The types of computer intrusions that we work on here in the cyber criminal section had been on the increase for a while, but it was sort of a slow and steady increase. I think to a certain extent, the COVID-19 pandemic has accelerated some of that increase that we've seen. And I can give you a couple of examples. The Internet Crime Complaint Center is one of our best sources for data here within the FBI, because a lot of the cybercrime that we see gets reported through the Internet Crime Complaint Center. And so, you know, prior to March of 2020, we were probably, you know, seeing around 2,000 complaints. We were probably seeing around 1,000 complaints a month. And then after the pandemic, hit in March, that number increased between 2.5 and 3 times on a month-to-month basis. So, mm-hmm. you know, just that increase in volume alone is really an indicator of what we've seen here. And then the other part of it is just, you know, like any other kind of state of emergency, we see an uptick in kind of fraud, internet fraud incidents or complaints related to that. That's pretty typical. So, you know, if we experience a hurricane or a tornado, or even when the Boston Marathon bombing occurred, a lot of scammers want to take advantage of those types of tragedies okay. for their own, you know, financial benefit. So we saw that for sure in the COVID-19 world. But the difference here is that many of those events, you know, like a hurricane or a natural disaster, typically localized in its impact. This is really a global impact. And so as a result, I think there's really this much more fertile ground of potential victims for scammers to take advantage of, because everyone across the globe really has been affected by COVID-19 in some way.
Right. Absolutely. And so I was reading, and we've discussed at Cybersecurity Ventures, that ransomware and phishing and romance scams are on the rise. Are those the big ones that you're seeing? Are there others, you know, that I didn't mention that might be on the rise as well for both companies and also individuals?
No, I think those really are the big ones that we see on the rise. You know, we're particularly concerned about ransomware right now, especially given, you know, some very recent events right. That have been in the news, you know, related to how those ransomware infections can potentially affect very sensitive operations of, you know, whether it be a healthcare provider or mm-hmm. hospital, whether it be a 911 or a first responder type of group. That's something that we know can also impact the physical safety of American citizens, in addition to just being a very, very expensive and damaging event for a business. So that's really at kind of at the forefront of what we're focused on right now. But, you know, phishing really kind of goes hand in hand with those ransomware attacks. Phishing still kind of remains the most common vector that we see for ransomware infections. And of course, phishing can lead to a whole host of types of cyber attacks, whether it be, you know, a harvesting of passwords and usernames, a credential harvesting type of attack, or whether the phishing ultimately might lead to a business email compromise, which is another cyber attack that we're very focused on trying to prevent right now. And I think the last one you mentioned were romance scams. Yeah. And I think, you know, romance scams have been really kind of like one of the mainstays of cyber criminal activity over the past 15 or 20 years. Like the romance scam was really something that existed almost at the beginning of the internet and still kind of persists today as a, you know, as a significant risk.
Right. And so how does the FBI handle these compromises and cyber threats and cyber warfare?
You know, I think the most important thing for us is that combating cyber crime is a team sport. It's right. really the ultimate team sport. And so we really try to take a multi-pronged approach where we work hand in hand with partners throughout the U.S. government, partners in state and local law enforcement, partners in private industry, partners in foreign law enforcement agencies to try to combat these threats. And so I think that's what we've learned, is that's really the only way that we can be successful is trying to fight that battle on all fronts. Because while we think that we know that Our law enforcement authorities do have an impact, and it can be a very impactful thing when we're able to indict and arrest a person who is, or people who are responsible for these attacks. We know that that's not the only way to fight this threat. Mm. And the prevention of these types of attacks is really preferred to the actual indictment and arrest. Right. If we can prevent attacks by educating the public or by working with our government partners to make sure that networks are hardened or the proper types of cyber hygiene measures are implemented, then we have a bigger overall impact. So that's really our overall approach. Specifically to the FBI, we try to focus in on having an impact on that cyber criminal ecosystem. There's kind of many parts that have to be in place for a cyber criminal organization to be successful. They have to have a way to get their money. They have to actually develop malware and deploy it. They have to be able to communicate with one another to the extent that they have, sort of outsourced these different roles. So those are some of the things that we're always looking for opportunities to use our authorities or the authorities of our other government partners to be able to disrupt those operations in any way that we can.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you. And you mentioned healthcare and first responders and the physical impact that those cyber threats can have. Of course, with the rapid onset of remote work, businesses were not necessarily equipped to handle their employees, having all of their IP on their home networks. Are there any other industries in particular that are targeted more frequently than others?
Well, I can't say for sure which industries might be targeted more frequently, but we do, kind of identify particular industries that we worry about the risk because of the broader impact that can have on our society. So I would put, any type of critical infrastructure into that category. So, I want to make sure I don't misspeak and say, sort of this is something that happens more often, but we are obviously very concerned if, a company that provides critical services like electricity or telecommunications, things within the financial system, when those things are targeted, and really any company that is connected to the internet, which is every company now, is really a potential target here. But there are some targets that potentially do more damage than others. So that's what we really try to look to do, is make sure that we are protecting critical infrastructure to the best of our ability. And we certainly do see those types of things targeted. A really good example of that is, we recently put out some public messaging regarding foreign governments targeting COVID-19 vaccine research. Mm. And so that's a prime example of the type of thing that, while that might not be the most common targeting that we see, the potential for damage there is high.
Right. Absolutely. Interesting. And so that public messaging for that vaccine research, where does that live? How does that public message, how is that communicated?
So we have a number of products that we put out to try to inform the public, and they serve different purposes. But so sometimes if it's a broad message out to the public about things to be on the lookout for, we might put out a public service announcement, which is on the IC3.gov website is where we post those. We also have, specific targeted messages to particular industries that might be targeted by a particular attack. And so if there are technical indicators that we could share that might help those companies protect themselves, we'll put that out in some type of private industry notification. And really the distribution of those will depend on the sensitivity of the information. Some of those we can distribute very broadly. Some other ones, because of potential sensitivity issues around the investigations, can't go out to the general public.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And so, without naming any names, of course, are there any specific COVID-19 cybercrime incidents that you could share with our listeners?
Absolutely. I think the things that we have seen most frequently related to COVID-19 are really COVID-19 themed phishing emails. Okay. So very early on, what we saw in March and April, we saw a lot of activity where an email would come out that purported to be from a legitimate government entity and was claiming to have the latest information on COVID-19 in a particular area, or, you know, click here for the latest guidelines from the CDC or another government entity. But of course, if you look very closely, you would be able to tell that that did not in fact direct you to a legitimate government website, but rather to a site that was designed to either deploy malware onto the system that you might be using, or to gather personal information that could be monetized in some way. So that was probably the major thing that we saw early on. So some other examples were charities that were fraudulent, that were claiming to be COVID-19 assistance charities. We also saw we saw a number of scams in which people purported to have to be selling PPE of some manner or another. And when in reality that PPE was never delivered or wasn't as advertised or those types of things. And then the last thing I'll mention is we did see a number of COVID-19 business email compromise scams. And so we saw a number of these BEC cases where the purported transaction was maybe for personal protective equipment, or even attempted to victimize local or state governments or healthcare providers by providing, purporting to sell them some type of medical equipment like ventilators or something like that. But in reality, it was just a sort of a pretext to get a wire payment, and sometimes large payments redirected to bad guys. And those business email compromise scams can be very convincing because they often, mimic legitimate vendors that a company has worked with in the past, or maybe even appear to be internal communications from within the company from an executive or someone in a position of authority. And so we saw a number of those that sort of took on the COVID-19 spin as well.
Mm, very interesting. I actually received one of those, a BEC, and it was, they were alleging that they were acting as our editor-in-chief and founder, Steve Morgan. And they said, please call me, I have something urgent. And it went to my spam folder, which was helpful. But I was looking through my email last week and I saw it, and I wasn't looking at the email address of who it was from, which was, a name of Anne, which obviously is not our founder's email address. But I felt so, I was started writing back to him. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I didn't see your email. And then I was like, wait, hold on. This is not Steve. So it's definitely
interesting. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because that's another, you asked me about trends. That's one of the things we've also seen, early on, and I'm talking 15 or 20 years ago in the world of internet scams, it was relatively easy to kind of pick out what was a scam because of the sort of syntax that was used and the way things were phrased didn't seem quite right. But I think that's another trend that we've really observed, is that the quality of the quality of the scam emails, if you will, is much, much higher. They're much, much more convincing than they would have been even a few years ago. And so obviously, that creates more risk if they're harder to spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And just looking at it on my phone, they had named their email address as Steve Morgan, but when I actually clicked into that, I could see the fake or, false Gmail account that they were using. So that I could have definitely been duped. And so speaking of that, of individuals being targeted, how can folks protect themselves?
The advice that we always give is really to just practice good cyber hygiene. I think, when you talk specifically about those BECs or the scam emails, doing exactly what you described earlier, where you sort of look behind what it might initially look like and make sure that you're kind of checking to see that the, if the email seems a little off to you, checking to see, did this really come from the email of the person that I think it came from? You know, those are really good practices to engage in. And honestly, just never providing personal information, passwords, usernames, any of that sort of thing, just not providing that over the internet or to a source that's, you know, that's not trusted. And when I say never providing it over the internet, you know, never kind of providing that in response to an email that could potentially be a phish. You know, typically you won't be asked for that type of information in an email by a legitimate business for the most part. I think another, you know, when we talk about ransomware and some of the more sophisticated criminal attacks that we see, a lot of that comes down to, again, being on the lookout for phishing, because that's one of the most common vectors, and not clicking on those phishing attacks, but also, also, you know, for like IT professionals, it's obviously very important to update and patch systems, you know, make sure that your operating system and your software and all those sorts of things have the latest updates. And then one of the things that in relation to the pandemic, when we talk about teleworking, is, you know, really it's important for workers to limit themselves to the software and products that are approved by their IT professionals, rather than kind of going off and finding other solutions that that could potentially bring malware onto the network, if that makes sense. So, you know, because once you're kind of working from home, sometimes convenience and security can be in a little bit of tension. And so as we all kind of battle those challenges of working from home, there might seem like a you know, an independent solution that you can put onto your system that will make things a little easier for you. But if that's not one of the things that's approved for your work network, then it's important to kind of keep those things separate. But, you know, honestly, there, I don't think there's a magic bullet. I think it's kind of observing those basic cyber hygiene practices that have really been drilled into people's heads over and over and over again. That's really the best, that's the best prevention tool that we have available to us.
Right. Yeah. Agree with that. Totally. And for anyone who, you know, maybe their cyber hygiene slipped up a little and perhaps they have become a target for cyber criminal activity. You mentioned the IC3 earlier, but how would someone go about reporting cyber criminal activity?
So the IC3 is always available for reporting to the FBI, ic3.gov. You can fill out an online complaint there. Sometimes you might need a little more immediate attention based on what the situation might be. And we really encourage individuals and businesses to contact our local FBI field office to report things to law enforcement. Either one of those ways is acceptable. It'll get in the right hands. You know, the IC3 takes that information and finds the right local field office to work with that. But if you already know or have a relationship with your local FBI field office, or you or you know where that's located, you can always pick up the phone and call. We just really want to stress the importance of reporting to law enforcement. I think often, you know, people worry that things will be made public about their particular situation, or that the FBI, you know, can't do anything for them related to a cyber incident. But that's really not the case. And only if we get that reporting from the public will we be able to ultimately bring the people responsible to justice. And we take the privacy and the sensitivity of our of complainants very seriously in the FBI. You know, a potential victim, we're gonna treat that person like a victim and make sure that we protect their sensitive and private information as we conduct our investigation.
Right, absolutely. And so, Section Chief Stapleton, before we wrap up this episode, is there anything else that you would like for our listeners to know?
Well, I think, you know, just in wrapping up, I think I would just kind of reiterate how important a role the public plays in this overall team sport of combating cyber threats. You know, the FBI holds just a few small pieces of the puzzle to solving the cybercrime problem. And many of those other pieces are really held by individuals and companies and organizations throughout the United States and around the world. And so what we hope to really do is foster this environment where we can work together on this problem. And we just look forward to those opportunities to work in collaboration to try to make everybody a little safer.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Section Chief Stapleton, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Section Chief Herb Stapleton of the FBI's Cyber Division. To learn more about the FBI's Cyber Division, visit fbi.gov/investigate/cyber. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.